Here's something most people don't realize. Great sleep doesn't happen by accident. It starts with what you're sleeping on. That's why I switched to Sheiks. Their bedding is made from the same performance fabrics you'd find in elite athletic wear, but designed to help you sleep better. If you run hot at night, these sheets help you stay cool and dry. If you love that cozy, ridiculously soft feel, they've got that too. Comfort that stays consistent from the moment you hop into bed. And for anyone with an adjustable base, this is a game changer. Their Stay Fit corners are the best I've ever tried. No slipping, no popping off, even when the bed moves. When your days are demanding, Sheiks helps you wake up restored, not run down. Try them for yourself with their 60-night risk-free guarantee. Upgrade your sleep at Sheiks.com.
The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening at the internet's only. Did something happen over the Riders' Bye Week podcast? I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual, as we do have plenty to get to this episode. An episode we, quite frankly, did not expect to record after we stopped last week, as it was probably going to be a bye week for us as well, barring something significant. And I guess it's safe to say something significant happened in the CFL.
It was peak us, the fact that we finish recording on a Wednesday and then comes through the news that, oh yeah, something major is coming on Monday. So, yeah, here we are. It's even funny. I had forgotten. I've been so busy lately that, you know, and we're in such a 24-hour news cycle thing that you were like, hey, usual time tonight. I'm like, what? It's a bye week. And you're like, yeah, the changes. I'm like, oh yeah, the changes. And like, I even got texts from like 4 or 7 listeners that are like, we want to hear your thoughts on the changes. So like, we're basically being dragged out by the 7 of you. Thank you, Grandpa Ted. Thank you, Jock. Thank you, Dave. So here we are. And now I have an excuse to drink on a Wednesday night.
Oh, well, let's be honest. You didn't need an excuse.
No, I work in the car business. I never need an excuse.
No. So yes, lots to get to on that front. By now, you all know the rule changes, so I don't need to probably go over them at the fine-tooth comb at this point. Everyone and their dog with the CFL podcast has talked about it at this point. We are probably the last on board with this one this week, but hey,
woo!
That's okay. If you're not first, you're last, and we weren't first, so we might as well be last.
That's true. We get the last say out of all the CFL podcasts and talking heads, so if you're looking,
I guess we've beaten the panel to the actual game day discussions that they'll have over the weekend.
And I know they had, I was watching.
Like, yeah, they had stuff on SportsCenter and stuff, but other than you, no one watches that. So it's like once we actually get to game day when people are watching them.
Yeah, that's fair. And people are expecting the opinion. I know like you've had like Milt Stegall and Bob Irving going toe to toe on social media this week, but that's just like, and in fairness, like, I get it. People are passionate. Mm-hmm. But one of my biggest criticisms of CFL fandom, and one of the few things I now agree with Luke Wilson on, is there is a bit of a barrier to entry created by the fans.
There can be, yeah, for sure.
And it just seems like we saw a bit of that week. Like, hey, like, I get it. You're passionate, and that's awesome. The league needs that passion. Life needs that passion. But to be why start a fight with somebody? Have a healthy debate. You know what? Honestly, like, I'm so sick of seeing strangers fighting on the internet and social media. Just get together over a coffee, over a beer, and talk about what you hate about the changes. Like, get together rather than, you know, just fighting everybody over it, right?
So yeah, I mean, I think it's important to remember that social media is not real life. There is probably a number of bots who just find stuff that people are mad about and start attacking you on that, especially on a former website that I used to frequent but no longer do.
Yes.
So that is certainly a thing that happens, and you know, people get different behind a keyboard. I don't think anything that is necessarily said on social media should always be taken as this is how the fans feel in general. Like, we will pick up on that feeling as we get closer, as these things actually start happening, and we see what happens in stadium when this sort of stuff starts happening. So I think that's important. And I think at the same time, before we get into any of the changes, I understand why a number of fans may actually be upset about this. And I know there are some fans that do listen to this podcast that I know that are actually upset. Hi, Jacques RJ. And that's okay. Like, I think that's perfectly fine. I don't think it's wrong. Like, I understand it's important for everyone to have the passion about this, and the passion of people care about it. And that's why they're so upset about it this week. I don't think personally these changes are necessarily these massive wholesale changes that I think don't make the game Canadian anymore. And we will get into that. But I do understand why there were certain aspects of this that may have been a hill too far, especially probably particularly the length of the field. I think everyone was to varying degrees happy to okay with most of those changes.
I mean, until you had, the sober second thought about the logistics and the reasons as to why. But let's face it, the biggest change, I think the change that is maybe going to be the most debated right here on this very podcast, the formal announcement that teams must be not on the same side of the field.
Yes, everyone knows at Hotel X in Toronto, that is why everyone gathered on this day to discuss the fact that going forward, at the Eastern stadiums, because that's who this affects the most, and the BC Lions, that they will no longer have teams on the same side of the field. This is the thing that everyone's been clamoring for. It has been the single greatest issue facing the CFL, and I am glad that they ultimately included that in this very important day, that they've handled this pressing issue accordingly.
I feel like that was one of those. I feel like that's like the thing you do, like when you're negotiating, just to get the negotiation started. Mm-hmm. That like everybody sit in the room and be like, "Hey, it's dumb they're on the same side, right?"
Like, to be entirely fair, yes, this should have been a change. It should have been a change years ago. It never should have been a thing in the first place, quite frankly. I'm just laughing at the fact that it somehow got included as a part of this announcement with these very large, significant changes. It's like, oh, yeah, and the teams are going to be on the opposite sides of the fields again. Okay, why is this a part of this? Are we also going to announce that the coins will now be, I don't know, purple going forward? Like what are we doing here?
Like really bearing the lead on this. So this is one of those things that they did they not even have it? I haven't watched the fairly slick video that they had. I'll give them credit for that. Was that in the video too?
I haven't watched the video, to be honest. I was at work when this was announced. So I snuck into the back room for a little bit to catch the first 5 minutes of what Stuart Johnston had to say. And then bounced from there because I knew everything I needed to know in terms of what was actually changing.
No, certainly. And I like the fact that it's phasing in. And I'm not going to lie, I had a bit of a Sunday fun day. I had Monday off. It's my birthday yesterday. So Sunday fun day with a couple friends of the program. I was a giant bag of shit on Monday and slept through this. And I fully anticipated to wake up from a solid hungover nap to you being pissed off at me for not responding. But thankfully you were at work as well, because I'm like, man, oh yeah, there's that announcement, but I'm just so hungover. Out I went for like a solid 4 hours that afternoon, and I woke up and I'm like, oh boy, Gasson just texted. Okay, good.
And we immediately started talking about teams being on the other side of the field now.
Exactly.
As one intended, as what was the most important piece of information we learned on Monday morning here in Saskatchewan.
I do love that on the CFL's official, I'm on the official, release page here on the website right now. And they bundle it in with the 35-second play clock.
Yep. I mean, it is, I guess, they are kind of tied together in the fact that with only 35 seconds to, less than that even to make your substitutions, if you weren't on the other side of the field and you had to go from the 10-yard line at the the 20-yard line, the opposite end of you, that would take an eternity. And that's kind of why those two ideas tie together.
No, that perfectly makes sense. As I didn't even realize, and now I I want to look out for it when I'm at a game. I want to look out for that guy running 50 to 60 yards for a substitution.
Well, you're only going to go probably two games with actual stadiums with teams on other sidelines, so you wouldn't notice it as much.
That's fair. That is fair. And the only, because I mean, realistically, I go to Winnipeg, I go to New Mosaic, maybe Edmonton. So none of that bizarro land.
Griffith Stadium, they're on opposite sides.
Yes, Griffiths is on opposite sides, which was a pain in the ass when I was a sideline reporter for the Huskies, because at the time they had the track. Mm-hmm. So like I had to like to get any intel, and I was like working both sides. I'd like see somebody injured, and I have to like jog all the way around the field and head to the other side, and you know creep because there's no blue medical tent, and then jog all the way back because the shitty equipment we had at Saskatoon Media Group, it didn't work. There was no delay. My mic was live all the time, and I had to like flag down Dave Thomas with a complicated series of arm waves when I was ready to go on air.
You were like, bunt. Precitus. Bunt. Precitus. To quote Corner Gas there, if anyone remembers that scene.
Yes. Well done. I very much like that. I am on board with that. After being the roast, after working in a Trailer Park Boys reference in my Roastmaster video, a little Trailer Park, or a little Corner Gas reference here in the podcast.
Absolutely. A show that I actually watched because I never watched Trailer Park Boys. Wasn't really my cup of tea, to be perfectly honest.
That's fair. That's I didn't super jump into it. I've enjoyed both shows for obviously very different reasons. But we all admit the greatest appearance of the Trailer Park Boys in any form of media is in the Tragically Hip video for The Darkest One.
Yeah.
Man, that song's good.
Yeah. They also appeared at AEW in Toronto this past weekend.
Yes, I saw that.
Bubbles
yes.
was there as the Green Bastard. Yeah.
He was, and definitely a better actor than Wendell Clark, who was also there.
I did not see that Wendell was there. No, that's a little too cliche and a little too on the nose for me. So yeah,
it was right in front of a poster of Wendell Clark, where Edge was going on about how he's the toughest person that's ever been there, and as expected, former professional hockey player, apparently good guy, Wendell Clark, not a great actor.
Hmm. But I mean, that would probably still be true because I don't think Wendell Clark played in that building, did he?
I think maybe when they had like that really weird like trade deadline when they brought a bunch of old guys back for like a game and everybody blew their knees out.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember if he actually played in that arena or not. Because if he didn't, then it's like, well, technically, no. Like, you played in the other one. So, yeah, I'm still the toughest one in this one.
Well, now I got to look it up, and I already have the Keys to the City tab opened. All right.
Does Wendell Clark have a key to the city?
Don't make me go into this now, too. I'm already on his hockey
DB. You're the one that said it was open. You're the one that said it was open. So, I mean,
it was. Okay. And
like your homepage now?
It is definitely when I open up my tabs. And it's
it is
funny
set to one of the automatic opens on the tabs now.
it's very close. It is one of the suggestions. It is Wikipedia Keys to the City. Saskatoon Blades legend Wendell Clark last played for the Toronto Maple Leafs in 99-2000.
Okay.
And the ACC was opened then, so I don't know.
He might have
opening.
Been.
He very yeah. well could have. And well, yes, the Scotiabank Arena opened February 19th of 1999. So yes, he did. Now, maybe you want to get to what's in the glass while I Google this one.
I thought you had that thing open.
I did it, and then I did this
quick control F. Come on.
I know, but the problem is what I did the problem of why do I oh, God, now I got to find it. Freedom of the City. Problem is I had it open, and I went to go control left, and I instead searched it on the same tab I had it open in. Okay,
I mean, we've learned that Toronto's giving out many keys to the city to, like, almost everyone, so...
But not to Wendell Clark.
Not to Wendell Clark, really. Hmm.
Like, and that seems like a prime candidate for Saskatoon as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, they have given it out to everybody, including Sharon, Lois, and Bram. Oh, boy, I can't even read some of those. J.K. Rowling, that one aged well.
Yeah, that aged real well, yeah.
Tiger Woods.
True.
Muhammad Ali in the year 2002. The entire province of Prince Edward Island.
I heard about that one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anson Carter.
Anson Carter?
Anson Carter.
How does he
not
have one
the hockey player.
Oh, Okay.
Oh, no, it is that one.
So how does he have one ahead of Wendell Clark? That's strange.
That is the enigma wrapped in a mystery that is Keyson City. Did you know that just weeks ago, they handed out one to Sarah Polley, who's a filmmaker. Also, no. Guillermo del Toro got one since the last time I referenced the Keys to the City on this very program. So Toronto's just still handing them out. They're making it rain Keys to the City.
Is there like just a monthly ceremony there for here's our Keys to the City's winners this month?
It basically was. There was one July 15th, July 24th, July 26th, and September the 6th.
That seems very excessive.
Like, I think how many,
if you step foot in or like moderately famous in Toronto, they'll just give you a key unless you played for the Leafs.
I guess so. Jackie Chan does his own stuff.
He has some
Mickey
kind of
Mouse.
Connection to Toronto, though. Like, but yeah, sure.
He does. But Mickey Mouse in 1999.
A fictional character has one?
In 1999. Like, it's just like... Like, again, they didn't. This is the crazy thing. Toronto did not start giving out keys to the cities till 1998, and then they just basically started doing it every 2 weeks.
Hmm.
Speaking of ones that didn't age well, Windsor to Joel Quenneville.
Ooh. Ooh.
Ooh. Yikes.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna. Yeah.
We will see how the rules in the CFL age. Over the next number of years, as of course by now you're very aware that the CFL has made a number of significant rule changes coming over the next couple of seasons. We will get into that and probably not much else actually this week. But before we get to all that, John, for the Pal Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
Did you know Celine Dion has the keys to the city of both Toronto and Montreal?
I believe that, yeah.
Yes, there you go. Okay, I'm down this rabbit hole again. I'm going to work in as many references as I can. In the glass this week, to start my Sunday fun day, I wanted something light and breezy, but still some good flavor. I went with a Golden Crush from Rebellion. Nice, hazy IPA flavor, only 4.5%. But then I canceled that out by drinking a literal glass of vodka from our friends at Lucky Bastard Distillers.
That'll do it, yeah. That you might as well have just had an actual stronger beer.
It's true. But I didn't want strong beer on Sunday Funday. Now I want some strong beer while I record this episode and try to work in Keys of the City references.
Fair enough. For me...
Okay, Ottawa's got more than Toronto, too, by the way, including Henry Burris.
Yeah, I mean, Henry Burris, that makes sense. I mean...
It really does.
He did win them a Grey Cup, so...
He did, yes.
He turned around the franchise like he has a few times, right?
Yeah, he is the franchise turner arounder, man.
And they could use it again, apparently. Oof.
Yeah, oh boy.
Oof. Tough losing to a team with a fullback throwing three times in a game.
Come on, he's at least a halfback. Like, he's not a quarterback.
He's a tight
end.
He's a tight end, okay?
He's a tight end with a read option. Like, oh my God, how do you win a professional football game completing three passes in the Canadian Football League? Like, I feel like...
The joke is that Chris Drevler basically broke the CFL and forced them to make changes on Monday.
I was literally just about to say that. They were on the verge, and they're like, nope, this shit can't happen again. We're going backwards if Chris Drevler is out there running around like an Iowa quarterback.
Iowa's like, offense I think actually Army's looks quarterback. Somewhat competent this year, so that doesn't even apply
right?
for whatever reason.
All right, now I got to look up what Army football's quarterbacks are doing.
For me, I do have the multinational Champal, nice, light, easy drinking beer that tastes like beer, but on a little bit on the lighter side, even of that, frankly.
It is very good. The current passing and rushing yards leader for the Army Black Knights is the same guy. It's their quarterback. So yeah. They're basically... Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
They are basically... And that's like, Army's not expected to be, like, good because, you know, they're soldiers first, right? In the entire season, he's a very Chris Strevlerian, 13 of 23 for 230 yards.
Yeah. The one thing you won't get out of Army, though, is their quarterbacks being 1 and 2 in interceptions.
That's true. That is only distinct to the CFL and to my loved Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Can we talk about something else that's making me happy, like rule changes? Can we stop talking about that ugly game? Like the fact that Wilson's rotting away on the bench and Mike O'Shea won't do anything. Oh, they're going to miss the playoffs. I keep saying it.
No, I don't think so at this point. I think Ottawa and Toronto losing this week put a real big dent in that.
They cross over and somebody goes Death Star mode on their asses.
Maybe. Interestingly enough, the CFL's like probability thing that they roll this time of year has the BC Lions at having the best chance of winning the Grey Cup right now.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we change the rules, does that change it?
Well, they're not in effect yet, but
I know that's the joke.
But I mean, like low key, talk a little bit of other football first.
Yeah,
the BC Lions do scare me with their ability to put up basically 40 points on command.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
There's a legit threat there if their defense just plays okay,
or they don't have to play in a snowstorm.
Yeah,
like that's the one thing. I don't know what the old Farmer's Almanac says for November in Regina, but hopefully it says terrible, terrible weather, because you have to assume the BC Lions are coming on through.
It's plausible. I mean, the Calgary Stampeders have looked pretty beatable lately, even with Vernon Adams at quarterback.
Now he's conking as well too, and you had Walker's shoulders made out of duct tape and hope. Now I'm looking at the Farmer's Almanac Regina.
I'm just weird as getting you all off all kinds of rails here.
I know.
Some people were sent off the rails this week by the decision by the CFL to make some rather significant changes to their gameplay. Not just the benches moving to the other sides, as we discussed earlier.
Yes.
There were some other big changes, most of which I think you can say both of us on this podcast are very in favor of. After that, I think both of us generally like it, but they weren't necessarily things we thought they would do or really dislike one way or the other had they done nothing about it. We'll start in the first year of this. So if you haven't heard, for whatever reason, this is a two-year phase, like 2026 is when some of these changes will come into effect. Then the more sort of field dimension stuff will come into effect in 2027, just to give them time to sort of figure this stuff out, both not only in terms of like game planning, but also in terms of list. How are we going to, you know, build the field, right?
Yes.
How
absolutely.
Is all this going to fit into our stadium, et cetera, et cetera? Especially one in, say, Regina, where Craig Reynolds, in an interview with Taylor Shire of the Regina Leader Post this week, basically said aloud that the Mosaic Stadium turf does need to be replaced, which is something we've talked about on this program. And got to give credit to Taylor Shire, too, who also asked whether they would be interested in painting the lines in the future, and Craig Reynolds basically said yes to that as well. So thank you, Taylor, for answering the questions that at least John and I have been very curious about over the last couple of years.
And we've probably been harping on for the past couple of years. So that is the one thing, and I think as we go through change by change, if there was a Greencast Wikipedia, if somebody took the time to, you know, condense our nonsense, I feel like every one of these things we've discussed as being a net negative for the CFL.
The first day, at least, for sure, yeah.
The first phase. That's what I mean, yep. Right? You and I have never talked about, you know, end zones and 100-yard fields. And we had some fun with the goalposts, obviously, when, you know, Cody Fajardo went doink. But, like, at least in 2026, this seems to be, like, stuff that we've brought up right here on this platform.
Here's something most people don't realize. Great sleep doesn't happen by accident. It starts with what you're sleeping on. That's why I switched to Sheiks. Their bedding is made from the same performance fabrics you'd find in elite athletic wear, but designed to help you sleep better. If you run hot at night, these sheets help you stay cool and dry. If you love that cozy, ridiculously soft feel, they've got that too. Comfort that stays consistent from the moment you hop into bed. And for anyone with an adjustable base, this is a game changer. Their Stay Fit corners are the best I've ever tried. No slipping, no popping off, even when the bed moves. When your days are demanding, Sheiks helps you wake up restored, not run down. Try them for yourself with their 60-night risk-free guarantee. Upgrade your sleep at Sheiks.com.
So what's going to happen next year? Number one, which is the one that I was the most excited about, is the 35-second rolling play clock. because yes. for years and years, the 20-second play clock has been a complete sham in the CFL. And we've talked about a lot on this program where it's basically, okay, the final play is end. The last play is ended. Okay, now the ref's going to pick up the ball. They're going to kind of wander over to the middle of the field. They're eventually going to spot the ball. And then the teams are each going to get like 20 seconds each to sub. And all of a sudden, it's been 30 seconds since the, you know, since the last play ended. But the game clock's been rolling this whole time. But the 20-second play clock hasn't even started yet.
Right.
And it's like, what are we doing here? Let's get this moving. Let's play the game. Let's get keep everything moving. And teams have obviously picked up on this, most notably would be Mike O'Shea. So you can call this the Mike O'Shea rule if you want.
Yes.
Because if you go, you know, in the peak bomber time, go look through some of their game logs and see how long it takes between the start of one play and the start of the next play. It's upwards of 50 seconds to a minute sometimes.
Yes.
And I am not complaining. I do not dislike the Bombers for taking advantage of that situation. That's how the rules existed. Mike O'Shea had that working to perfection to kill as much time as possible in a game when they had the lead. More power, more credit to him for figuring it out. Good for him.
Absolutely.
But it had to go, and thank God it's gone. And we could finally just, okay, plays up, 35 seconds, let's go.
As somebody, and as both of us, watch a ton of football,
yeah,
this really has become more noticeable in the past couple of years, especially when you compare it to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The NFL uses a rolling 40-second clock.
Yep.
Or a 25-second clock on, you know, certain things, right? And you can tell, like, guys are, you know, the substitutions are tight. Guys are getting on and off the field. You know, even if you're running up to the line, like, to get the play and everything like that. Like, the chaos which that happens leads to the excitement of the game.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't just become a slow saunter, like you're my almost 40-year-old ass playing flag football, just kind of sauntering to the sideline because I'm way out of shape, right? And this is the one that I take issue with about people being upset about.
Mm.
And I get it, you're passionate, but you know what? If you watch the games, and as you brought it up, Winnipeg games, and now you see other teams doing it now, taking advantage of the fact that everybody's just kind of in, like, rather than go mode, everybody's just kind of in lazy saunter mode, this was absolutely necessary.
Yep.
You and I went on for probably 10, 15 minutes about what a joke, well, not a joke, but what a gaping loophole this was for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for so many years. So, yeah, it's I'm glad that this is one of those things that they're catching on to before kind of the general public notices and just sees, like, how egregious this can be. And you're right. Mike O'Shea and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have used it to perfection, basically, since they got good.
Yep. Yeah, and I know there's questions about what will this mean for the final 3 minutes. All that's to be ironed out. Basically, what had happened over the last number of months, listening to Justin Dunk with Stuart Johnston, he went on like a listening tour. He met with some people. He talked to a lot of people, different organizations and stuff, but it was still kind of a small controlled group that took care of this, and they kept it very quiet. NDAs were signed. Like, this whole thing was very professionally, quietly run. And the point was to work efficiently, get this out in sort of a timely manner, and then basically provide a framework for the rules committee that has frankly dragged their heels on, you know, sort of advancing the game in any significant sort of manner into this sort of big change and say, okay, this is what the game is going to look like starting in 2027 and 2026. It's your job to figure out how the rules work around this. So I think it's reasonable and it's fair, and that's good management to let your people now do their job now that you provided the framework on what they're going to be working with. So all of these questions and concerns that everyone has about it, give them time. I think they'll sort it out. I think ultimately the 3-minute rules don't really need to change all that much because
no,
if we're talking about a group of people that haven't really changed the rules of the game that significantly as the rules committee, I wouldn't expect them to suddenly go NFL style. You can kneel 3 times, the game's over. I think you're going
certainly
to see basically what it is where, okay, the play clock, the play's over, the play clock starts, but the ref still whistles in the game clock at that point, which credit to Argo's analyst, Ben Grantiner, in some chats saying that he went back and did a few games. Generally speaking, it takes about 10 to 15 seconds for them to do that. So you're really not going to run that much time off the clock, probably, if they run it that way.
Right. or you do something as simple as adding a third timeout. Right? Like, it just seems...
No, I think they probably, if you basically just leave the rules as are, you're probably only going to end up killing about 20, 25 seconds of game time.
Right, certainly, which is what we
Unless
want.
Unless literally you run the hurry up to try to kill more clock for some reason, but I would rather take my time in that situation to make sure I get my play call right rather than screwing something up.
No, certainly, 100%. Well, and like, you and I were texting about things that make the CFL the CFL. Mm-hmm. Right? It's three downs.
Yep.
It's the wide fields, it's 12 men on the field, it's the waggle, yep. And to me, I hate agreeing with Glenn Suter. But it's this, it's yep. the fact
it is a
that...
part of it. I still, I know, and I know I'm like on this hill kind of alone, I think you were with me a little bit.
Yes.
I like the idea of trying to provide some sense of urgency for an offense that's losing. In this scenario, trying to catch yes. up, because I think it's also ridiculous that you can go down the field, like run an 80-yard drive in a minute of clock time.
Agreed.
That's just not natural. If it was up to me, the clock would only stop on first downs. So then you're at least forcing teams to try and push the issue down the field a little bit in order to stop the clock. But at the end of the day, it's not a hill I'm willing to die on, but it is one I'm kind of standing on, being like, hey, this also is not natural, but whatever.
But you know what? I'm with you. But on the other hand, it's entertaining as hell.
It is. It is. It does make it dramatic and interesting. There's no question about that. But I do. It just bugs me sometimes when teams are like basically throwing 6 yard outs all the way down the field for a game winning touchdown in like a minute, and it's like, okay, really? Like okay.
certainly. Oh, I certainly see, and I do agree with you, and especially like. The way that a game can drag when you know the team's out of it, but they're still kind of trying.
Like, that was the other side of it. Like, I would make an amendment to the rule where if it's like a four score game or something in the final 3 minutes, let's just let them kneel it out and get the hell out of there.
I mean, we don't have to be like Ontario Junior Football that has to call a game at halftime because the team's up 92-0. But
yeah,
no. Again, big fan of everything coming in 2026, and I say that as a avid Rouge defender.
Mm-hmm. But I think you and I have both always sort of felt that it made more sense to actually have to earn the Rouge rather than just blasting it through something.
Watching Liram Haralahu celebrate a missed field goal against the Riders might have been the dumbest shit I've ever seen. And let's face it, in today's day and age of social media snippets, and some outlets do it really well. John Boy does it really well. I love John Boy and their breakdowns and stuff, right?
Yeah.
To bring, like, and the thing I say I love John Boy is they bring generally positive attention to everybody, right? Like, hey, here's a cool moment in the CFL, and here's a cool moment in lacrosse, and whatever. But the fact that even they're dunking on the fact that the kicker misses a field goal and celebrates, like, I love the... You and I have both said that it shouldn't be... There shouldn't be a point for a missed field goal. I've been saying that since I was with Travis on Two and Out.
Yeah.
Like, I've been on that, and I'm a guy that loves the Rouge, so the fact that they're now making it, you know...
It's a football play now.
Like,
100%. If a player concedes it, or you're able to tackle the returner in the end zone, fine. Absolutely. That should be worth a point.
Yeah. 100%, right? You're making a sacrifice for scoreboard over field position if you're the returner, or if you're the and again, it makes it exciting. Is he going to run it out? What are they going to do with it now, right? And then for the special teams cover units to get down there in a hurry and cover the guy, like, and again, another purely CFL thing that is sticking around that I'm glad they didn't touch, that I was a little worried they would, is the no yards call. Like, now, again, it's going to be so interesting, you know, what does every player do? You can't get it through kicking it. The only one I don't like is seeing it happen that you can't kick it through the end zone on a kickoff.
I mean, it happens so rarely.
I know, but it's cool when it happens.
The Rouge only applies, has only complied there when it's been conceded for a little while now anyway.
Right.
So, but, I... I don't think that it happens so rarely. You need it to be like really windy, but I guess with the shorter fields it could. But I still don't think we'll see it all that often.
No, but it's still one I liked. I mean, I get it. I know they changed the kit seating a while ago, and I know it. You know, Sergio Castillo should have won MOP of the Grey Cup against Hamilton, but that's the biggest reason why I like it. But no, it makes it a strategic decision rather than rewarding failure. I will admit, not seeing a punt out anymore.
I mean, we could, in theory, still see a punt out.
Yeah, I think it's not quite as likely.
I mean,
when's
the last time we saw one?
That's fair. You're accurate there, right?
Like that famous one between Toronto and Montreal that still plays online all the time, maybe the last real one we saw.
Right. Well, and to be fair, any good kicker at any level can kick at 60 yards now.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, it's far more likely to maybe see it in like a late game scenario where it's like maybe it's like a 1-point game and you're the receiving team and you're up one and you're just going to try and, you know, instead of trying to run it out because maybe you don't think you can get there, you punt it back out. Like maybe.
Yeah. So we could still potentially see it. Could be chaos, would still be good. But 2026, I like. Mm-hmm.
2027 is sort of where the quote unquote controversy comes from. In terms of what's changing with the league. Of course, number one, that this is the one that Stuart Johnson led off with, was that the field goal posts are moving to the back of the end zone, which is also going to be shorter at 15 yards, which makes sense because realistically, you couldn't leave it at 20.
No.
And put the field goal post at the end of the end zone. You'd have to get to like the 20-yard line to kick field goal, which I would be perfectly fine with, but I understand why, in terms of like actually still trying to score points, that would be pretty bad.
I mean, even with it being 115 yards, you're 7 for the snap and hold. So, I mean, you're still less likely to see field goals.
It's not like you don't need to drive obscenely far to get into it. You still need to go a little bit, but not like – you still need to go deeper than you need to right now, which I think is good. That's what she said.
Right.
But I think, you know, because I think – before it was like realistically the way kickers are today in the CFL, you had to get to like the plus 50 to get into field, to get into, you know, the edge of field goal range for most kickers.
Well, realistically right now, so under the new changes, a 52 yard will be the 30 yard line.
Yep.
So like you're still, I like this because, and again, we all know I love kickers. You're now, You don't have to go a short distance and automatically score, right? And I think that's what the game had become. And now you're in a truly, every head coach is going to have the decisions to go for it.
We're
going to be extra powered lead.
Who actually gets modern football and who doesn't?
That's exactly it, right? If it's a 52 yarder from the 30 yard line, why on earth would you ever not go for it from the 30?
Yeah, I mean, there's like 4 seconds left in the game and you're kicking to win or something, but yeah.
Exactly, right? So that's the whole thing. As Stuart Johnson talked about, more touchdowns, more excitement. I mean, nobody...
60 feels a little optimistic, 60 more touchdowns than in a season because of moving the goalposts, but I do believe there'll be more because the stats have been out there and they back it up, where like the league provided the stats where it was. Basically, you see in the CFL game, the quarterback basically attacks the middle of the field all the way down the field on average more often than not until they get to the end zone. And it's like twice as many passes go out to the wings than they do into the end zone. And not to even dismiss if you're backed up in your own end zone, though the goalposts are in the way, you can't throw to half the field. And that makes it far easier to defend because you're like, well, I don't have to worry about over there because he literally can't throw it there.
And that's exactly it, right? It's a unique quirk, and you and I were talking before we began, and maybe this is something, because we were talking a bit about U Sports and the CJFL and what it's going to be like. But like, maybe that's how U Sports keeps some of its charm and keeps its exclusive U Sports stadiums with the goalposts, you know, on the goal line. But I don't like anything that, like, and I was thinking about this when they made this announcement. This would be like if in curling gas, you know, you could randomly put a brick down the middle of the sheet. Like, you could just block off part of the sheet. You know, if it was like golf where, no, the right side of the fairway is magma, right? Like, it just, there's nothing.
I mean, in golf, we just put windmills on the green.
That's exactly it, right? Or, you know, the whole tower collapses and Happy Gilmore has to putt through all of it. But it's just, it seems so absurd to me that a piece of the playing field is an obstruction.
Yeah. And, right? I get some people say, and we've heard some quarterbacks like Nathan Rourke said it, where like you use the goalpost as a bit of a pick play sometimes. Sure.
Right.
But I think you would still rather it be completely wide open.
Well, now you have your whole playbook.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Let's face it. When a team is down, especially where the hash marks are positioned, when a team is down to like within the five, for example, right? You've basically got, if you're on the right hash, it's pass right, run left, run middle, right? Now your entire playbook is open. Mm-hmm. And the 15 yards, you can do whatever the hell you want. You can run any kind of pattern that you want in those 15 yards.
Realistically, also shortening the end zone does, it opens it up a bit even more, because I think if you're at the 5-yard line, you're asking the quarterback to make a 25-yard throw to the back of the end zone. If someone's back there, and like, it's not impossible. It's obviously like for a professional quarterback, not a difficult throw, but it is far more risky. And
Certainly. That's
a thing offensive coordinators hate. So that's why you generally don't see it. And like, I think shortening the end zones is good in a lot of ways. They're still bigger than an NFL end zone, which is good, because I think NFL end zones, frankly, get too congested.
Oh my God.
Down
yes.
there. So yeah. It's good to have that little bit more space still, especially with how wide it is. So there's still a lot of real estate to work with. It is just now wide open, and you can actually take advantage of all of it.
And think logistically here. You now just made it that you can fit a CFL game into any soccer stadium.
Yes, and this is, of course, also to do with removal of 10 yards. And this is, of course, the one that I think has caused the most grief from CFL fans, which I understand. Like, the center line, the 55-yard line, whatever it was marked on your field is, you know, it's an iconic part of the CFL lore. I understand that. And like, I understand you're allowed to be upset. No opinion is wrong on this. But things change over time. Things change over time. And sometimes things need to evolve. We're talking about a league that by every sort of metric that we're aware of just hasn't grown. Attendance is flat. It's up like 0.9% or something this year. We haven't seen the TV numbers this year. One would assume they're sort of in the historical range they've always been. Eventually, the people that do watch this game are just not going to be here anymore. And how do we grow the next generation of fans? Because they clearly have not been connecting with this game. And this is not about necessarily converting NFL types. It's just about making a far more entertaining, exciting product for literally anyone who may want to get involved.
Certainly.
Because I don't think the hardcore NFL is the only thing I watch. People aren't going to be converted, but there's still all kinds of other sports fans out there that you might be able to get with the right. And this is not just, you can't just change the game. Yes, we know the business side needs to be better. The marketing needs to be better. All of that stuff needs to be better, but that alone isn't going to get you over the hump. You need the product that they also want to consume.
Absolutely. You don't watch Red Zone with Hansen on NFL Sundays for the field goal or the punt timer. I mean, you and I might. You, me, and the Sickos committee might. We watch for the every touchdown thing. And this is going to lead to more touchdowns, right? Yep. This is, honest to gas, this is the one I struggled with the most.
Yep.
But the fact that it's about growing the game, and now you can take our game and put it in any soccer stadium. Hello, Halifax.
Yeah, like this opens up doors, I think, first and foremost in Canada. Obviously, it makes expansion into Halifax or somewhere else far more likely. Mm-hmm. I think it low-key could open up the door to a Grey Cup in Montreal before the Big O is ready, which would be nice for their fans to get that reward for waiting so goddamn long.
100%.
It opens up all kinds of possibilities in terms of neutral site locations for the league as well. Some people are thinking bigger, you know, in the United States or international or that. Like, that very well could happen someday, but I don't think the league is at the point where they're going to put games in those places, because I don't think anyone's really going to show up. So they need to grow as a game and as a business before getting that. But, you know, they are ready for that should that opportunity arise.
And here's the funny thing. Toronto's 118-yard end zone. Montreal is 117 with weird octagon corners. And Winnipeg back in the day played on a 115-yard field way back in the early days of the CFL. So change is good. Look at all your favorite sports. you know, nobody can tell me that hockey was more exciting when you could bear hug somebody all the way down the ice. You know, it's more exciting now. Basketball changed the three-point line. Baseball's put in a pitch clock. You know, we literally invented a second variation of lacrosse to make it more exciting. Like, it's just, change is good, change is positive, have an open mind, trust that the league knows what the hell they're doing, even though the track record's not so good, but I think this is going to be a net positive, and personally, I'm super excited to see, you know, the party zones that I'm sure are going to come up here in stadiums in 2027.
And I think sort of most of the fear, I think, comes around to what happens next, because Stuart Johnson has not been shy about the fact that more announcements are coming on a variety of topics, not just change. Like, they're apparently going to finally announce the Grey Cup halftime show soon. There's a 2027 Grey Cup to announce soon. So there's more stuff coming. But I don't think he's done making changes. And I think this is where the biggest of fear rests. And I understand that. I hope as a group that whoever is, you know, working with him in terms of these changes understands sort of the basics of what actually makes this game unique, which is the things we've talked about, right? It's the three downs. It's the 65-yard wide field. It's the unlimited motion. It's, you know, the rouge existing to some degree. It's the no yards. It's the Canadian involvement in the game. It's the ratio, which is a CBA negotiated thing, so they can't just remove that willy-nilly. You know, all that sort of stuff is what adds up to what makes the Canadian game unique. And I think if we start getting down too big of a rabbit hole of touching some of those, then we're getting into deep waters, because I don't think a league that is literally the NFL 2.0 is going to survive. We've seen that time and time again in the United States. It just, even we see it with the MLS not being as popular in North America as it could be, because it's like, I know soccer fans who tell me they don't watch the MLS because it's not as good as watching leagues in Europe, because it's literally the same game, right?
Yes.
You need to have some kind of differentiation factor, and the CFL still has that. And I think it's important that they continue, that there's changes still to be made, no question. I think there's still lots of things that, you know, we could talk about reviewing penalties and the review, you know, the role of the command center in general and the playoff format and divisions. And there's lots of stuff that, you know, on the peripheral that we can still talk about now. But I don't think those sort of core things, if they get into that range, then they're really going to have a problem with survival.
Oh, yeah. You get rid of three downs, you get rid of the waggle, you make the field skinny. There is an all-time Fraser rant coming.